Channel open. Welcome back to Weekly Trek, a proud member of the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network. I am your host, Alex Perry.
What's today's date? The date.
Today's show was recorded on November the 15th, 2019, and is current through the Star Trek Short Trek episode, Ask Not. So beware of spoilers. All right, let's get into the show.
Good day, Voyager, and welcome to A Briefing with Neelix. It's a catchy title, isn't it?
Weekly Trek is a 30-minute news show covering the biggest stories from the Star Trek franchise. We are in a new golden age of Star Trek. There are 5 television shows at some point in production, possibly more on the way, and enough merchandise to fill the Bajoran wormhole. So stick with me, and I'll help you sort the real facts from a lot of the Dominion propaganda that you'll find online. But I can't do this alone, and my guest this week is the co-host of Trek Live over on YouTube, Mr. Bill Mann. Bill, welcome to Weekly Trek.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here. I've had the pleasure of being on the Tricorder Transmissions before with Trek Ranks, but this is my first time on Weekly Trek, and I'm really excited to be here.
Yes, and it is a fun week for Trek news, so I'm excited to dive in. But before we do that, Bill, I ask my guest this question every week. I want to know something that's got you feeling good about Star Trek at the moment. What's got you moving at Warp 10?
Right now, I'm actually really excited about the Blu-ray release of Season 2 of Discovery.
All right.
Specifically, I'm really happy with the bonus features. I was actually really impressed with the depth and the sort of amount of content that's there. I really enjoy the bonus features that are on the great Blu-ray releases of Enterprise and TNG. There's some really, really good stuff there. Retrospective, look back, kind of documentaries. But the bonus features here showing on the set production as it's happening, production designer walking around, touring the sets, showing it off. That's sort of a new thing for me, at least, with kind of consuming these bonus features. And it leaves me wishing that we could have gotten things like that back in the old glory days of Rick Berman era Star Trek, seeing Herman Zimmerman doing the kinds of things that we get to see on these Blu-rays for Discovery. But I really enjoyed going through them. I haven't watched the commentary tracks yet, but I'm really looking forward to them. There's quite a few. I want to say 4 of them?
Yes.
So there's still more that I haven't gotten to yet. So that Blu-ray has given me all kinds of new good feelings this week.
Well, I am so pleased to hear that. This is the week that Star Trek Discovery Season 2 was released on Blu-ray. I have it. I have not taken it out of the packaging yet. But you are not the first person to tell me that the bonus features are A, great, and B, a big improvement upon the Star Trek Discovery Season 1 Blu-ray.
Huge improvement.
Yeah, the bonus features on that set were pretty disappointing, actually, I think. So it is exciting to hear that they did put a bit more time and effort into the Season 2 Blu-rays. And also, I am really looking forward to listening to those commentary tracks. We didn't get any for Season 1. And there are some fun combinations of people, like, I think the one I'm most looking forward to is the New Eden commentary track is Anson Mount and Jonathan Frakes. And I think that'll probably be a whale of a time.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah, I definitely would echo the sentiment that it's a huge improvement over the bonus features on the first season set. I can confidently say that.
Well, the thing I'm feeling good about Star Trek this week is the most recent Short Trek, Ask Not, which I won't talk about the plot too much since I know folks outside of the US and Canada have not had the chance to see it. But I will just say that I thought it was fabulous, very Short Trek. This one clocked in at less than 10 minutes long. But I thought it was really good. Bill, did you see Ask Not? And what did you think about it?
I did see it, and I couldn't agree more. I enjoyed it a lot. And to be honest, I think the excitement about a potential Pike show is maybe what drives my enjoyment of it the most. It introduces a pretty neat, exciting new character who I think has some potential to maybe stick around for such a show if that were to happen. And there's so much promise. I think Anson Mount's wonderful as always. And it's a neat little story. Like you said, it's very, very short. It's I'm sure it's the shortest of the Short Treks so far. Mm-hmm. So it's very brief, but I think it does what it comes to do. And it satisfied me. And it made me hungry for more with Captain Pike and the Enterprise, and hopefully it happens.
I was hoping going into it that the last shot of the short trek would be, you know, like the Bond movies end with James Bond will return. I was hoping that this one was going to end with Captain Pike will return.
Yes.
But even though it didn't have that, it still did have very much that feeling of them kind of saying, yeah, we're going to do this without actually having said it yet. I am more convinced than ever that there is an announcement on the way about a Pike show.
It certainly doesn't end with any kind of feeling of this is the last time you're seeing these characters. You know, like it does not leave that as any kind of final send off for these characters and these actors. So I agree.
All right. Well, with that, let's turn to the week's top stories.
There's a war going on, and I'm a reporter.
So our first story this week is actually kind of dovetails right off of the conversation we were just having about the short treks. We did not get our Captain Pike will return closing in the short trek this week, but we did get our first glimpse of the two animated short treks that will be released on December the 12th. So there's a very short trailer at the end of Ask Not that gave us just a few quick shots of both the animation style and finally gave us a sense of what the story will be for both of these short treks, and they both look very exciting. So up till this point, the only thing we've known about these short treks are the names, Ephraim and Dot and The Girl Who Made the Stars, and that Michael Giacchino, the composer of the Kelvin Timeline movies, who's also been the supervising composer for the short treks, would be both composing and directing one of these animated short treks. And we knew that Olatunde Osunsamni, one of the Star Trek Discovery executive producers, would be directing the other. But we didn't know which was which. Well, now, thanks to this week, we have a really good sense of who's doing what and also what each of these two short treks will be about. So Ephraim and Dot, which is the Michael Giacchino short trek, is about a tardigrade. Yes, the same kind of tardigrade that we saw in Star Trek Discovery Season 1 named Ephraim, which, interestingly, if you know your Star Trek Discovery production history, was the name of the tardigrade crew member who was planned for the bridge crew of Discovery before they decided to kind of build the tardigrade into the spore drive plot and make it more of a creature rather than a crew member. So it's a tardigrade and one of the Dot 7s, the repair drones that we saw in the Star Trek Discovery Season 2 finale, Such Sweet Sorrow, which at a critical point in battle, the Enterprise deployed these drones to help kind of repair some of the damage. So Ephraim, the tardigrade, who we get a look at in a quick shot, and Dot, the Dot 7, in another one, also got just a glorious view of the USS Enterprise in animated form. So that's number one. Oh, and the other thing we found out about it this week, which also is very exciting, is that Kirk Thatcher has a voice role in the Michael Giacchino short trek. And you may be wondering, who is Kirk Thatcher? Well, you actually know who Kirk Thatcher is. He is incredibly famous in Star Trek circles for having played the punk on the bus in Star Trek IV. The Voyage Home. So while I hope he is reprising his role of punk on the bus in Ephraim and Dot, I would imagine it is a new character. The other, The Girl Who Made the Stars, which I would assume is therefore the Olatunde Osunsamni short trek. It looks like from the few shots we got of a young girl on a planet surface, refers back to the fable that Michael Burnham had a voiceover about in the Season 2 Star Trek Discovery premiere Brother, about literally the girl who made the stars, the old African fable about the creation of the universe. Bill, this seems really exciting. What were your first reactions of these little snippets?
First reactions is the radical difference in the animation styles, which I think we kind of knew. They kind of implied that pretty early on, right? That there were going to be different styles of animation.
And not only different styles of animation, but that they would be different from each other, but also they would be different from either Lower Decks or the Nickelodeon show.
Yes. Which is really cool. I love the way that these short treks are not just playing with things like that, but playing with tone and, you know, types of genre, types of stories. So I like seeing the short treks continue to sort of expand and not be afraid to play in new territory. And this is certainly bold new territory for Star Trek, a return to animation, which we're, of course, getting more of in the future with the whole new shows. But it certainly kind of took my breath away a little bit, that first shot of the trailer for both of the Enterprise and the animation again, as somebody who, you know, grew up watching VHS tapes of the animated series. I can't say I go back to it very often these days, but I certainly have a lot of nostalgia for that show and for those images specifically. So that shot of the Enterprise is certainly very much a callback, in my mind at least, to those stock shots of the Enterprise in TAS. So a lot of warm feelings from that, kind of piggybacking off of what we were sort of just talking about with Ask Not. You know, these dot repair drones are yet another thing that seem to, you know, be, you know, they seem to have spent a lot of time developing, you know, the Enterprise in this iteration and, you know, its tech and its sets and all these things. So to me, that's yet another kind of breadcrumb that could lead to more on that ship in the form of another show. So now that we know like what the background of that short is and what it's about, it leads to more excitement on my part for the possibility of more. And I have no idea why Kirk Thatcher is involved or who he's playing, like you said, but if that's not one of the coolest callbacks and one of the coolest little wink, wink, nod, nod to the fans in recent years, I don't know what is. It's just a neat little touch, and I'm very anxious to see what he's doing and how he's involved. And the girl who made the stars, I think, looks really cool, too. I think the animation of that looks beautiful. I think every shot that we see, I think there are three, maybe, it looks gorgeous. It ties back to the very first moments of Brother. Certainly the first thing that came to mind when I saw the title way back when. It's a line very early on in the premiere of season two of Discovery. So I'm eager to see what they are and how long they are. You know, how big are these stories? How small are these stories? Just eager to see and to get back into the world of Star Trek and animation.
Well, speaking of wanting animated Star Trek, if you are a Netflix subscriber and you have Star Trek the Animated Series on your to-watch list at some point in the near future, you probably want to get a move on. According to Netflix, Star Trek the Animated Series will be leaving the service on December the 1st. It will be the first Star Trek TV show to have left Netflix. As I recall, the animated series joined the service later than the live-action shows did when they first appeared on Netflix in probably 2011, 2012. But it is on its way out. It does remain available on Amazon Prime and CBS All Access. So if you're subscribers to those, you will still be able to get access to the animated series. But it's headed off of Netflix. And normally that wouldn't be such a big story, but I do wonder if it potentially portends a future in which CBS will begin to kind of pull back on some of these licensing deals for Star Trek to push more eyeballs for Star Trek content to CBS All Access. We've certainly seen that for a number of other companies, like, you know, Disney just launched their Disney Plus service, for example. As part of that, they've been unwinding their deals with folks like Netflix, who've had the Marvel movies, who've had some of the Disney content, and now all of that is on its way off of Netflix. I wouldn't be surprised. We don't know anything yet other than just that this one, you know, relatively minor part of the Star Trek pantheon is headed off of one streaming service. But it also wouldn't shock me if over the next couple of years we did find that, you know, they started to pull back just to CBS All Access. Bill, you said you haven't revisited the animated series in a little while. Does this convince you to fire it back up again? And what do you think? Are we slowly going to lose them from the streaming services?
It does tempt me a little bit because of just ease of access on Netflix to throw it on and burn through it real quick. So we'll see about that. But I echo your sentiment. I totally anticipate that over the next couple of years that Star Trek content is largely going to be home to CBS All Access exclusively. It just kind of follows the pattern of what, like you said, Disney is doing with Disney Plus. I think Disney Plus maybe having the agency and the scope to be a little bit more aggressive with making a move like that maybe softens the ground for, you know, CBS to make that move a little bit later on and not look quite so aggressive on their own. Maybe they're sort of just falling in line with what the standard is sort of becoming with these kinds of things. When the IP owner has its own streaming service, from the IP owner's perspective, I'm sure it makes perfect sense to hold that dearly and try to pull people that service's way. So I do think over time that's probably likely to happen. My assumption, I guess, would be that the animated series, like you said, having arrived on Netflix quite a few years after the bulk of Star Trek on television, maybe the animated series was on a different licensing agreement or something. Like, you know, I'm sure there are all kinds of legalese reasons for the animated series pulling off now as opposed to, you know, maybe later on. But I'm sure it is an omen for what's to come. As a CBS All Access subscriber and a happy subscriber with no intention of, you know, bailing on that anytime soon with all the content, I'm fairly at home with that idea. I think the quality of the streaming on CBS All Access has improved over time. You know, the HD shows, Enterprise, TNG, TOS, I think look better than they did a year ago. So with all that kind of falling into place, I'm fairly content to watch Star Trek on CBS All Access. I admit that I tend to go to Netflix frequently out of habit and, you know, just being on Netflix a lot for other things. But I'm not opposed to the idea as a CBS All Access subscriber to making Star Trek's home as far as streaming goes in the future.
And I've seen from some of our more techie-file friends who care more about sort of picture quality and stuff that actually CBS All Access has the best picture quality of the three services on which Star Trek's available, particularly for the standard definition shows, Deep Space Nine and Voyager, where the quality of those shows on streaming is pretty appalling in some cases. And so, you know, even a marginal improvement can actually have a big impact. And CBS All Access apparently is the place to go if you want to watch it in the best quality that you can without owning it on DVD or Blu-ray, because obviously those are still the best way that you can watch it. More than streaming. But if you have had a hankering to revisit the magics of Magus 2 and you only have a Netflix subscription, I would encourage you to fire it up in the next 2 weeks because it will be gone beginning December the 1st. From the animated shows to Discovery, we've got actually a really interesting story on the real-world impact of Star Trek Discovery over the last couple of weeks. It turns out that Star Trek is big business for the province of Ontario and the city of Toronto, Canada. According to an economic analysis that was conducted on behalf of the province of Ontario, Star Trek Discovery has spent now $257 million in the Ontario province and has created 5,000 new jobs in the process, with, I think, more on the way, since we know that with the exception of Star Trek Picard, new live-action Star Trek will be filmed in Toronto. That's something that Alex Kurtzman, the current franchise showrunner, has said. In a quote about the analysis, John Tory, the mayor of Toronto, said, "Toronto has the infrastructure and the talent to attract top-rated programs such as Star Trek Discovery. This economic analysis demonstrates why I'm so proud to champion our growing screen industry and our city's commitment to working with our industry partners to develop, expand, and diversify both our workforce and production facilities." Well, that is rather a dry quote for a press release, but it was plastered all over social media on Halloween. John Tory, the mayor of Toronto, was out and about trick-or-treating wearing a Star Trek Discovery Admiral's uniform. And given how much money Star Trek is making for his city and the number of jobs it supported, I suppose we can see why he is interested in bigging up Star Trek. I mean, that is a colossal amount of money, don't you think, Bill?
It is. And I think it speaks to the size of the production, the scope of the production. And I think kind of to piggyback off of what I said I was excited about this week with the Star Trek Discovery Season 2 Blu-ray, the bonus features, I think one of the things that those features highlight really well is the scope of the production and how many people are working on it and how much sort of blue collar grunt work hard, dirty, you know, carpentry and construction and jobs that people maybe not don't think about, you know, being associated with the production of a TV show, there is going into the show. And I think this story certainly illustrates that pretty well, that it's putting a lot of people to work in Toronto. And I think that's great. And the other thing I would want to point out is a lot of the talent behind the scenes, Gersha Phillips and folks like that are Toronto-based, you know, creative people who work in television. And they've been incredibly talented and have brought so much to the show, so much quality to the show. And are such great representatives for the show when they give interviews and speak about their work on the show. So, you know, it kind of goes both ways. We're getting a lot of really cool, new, talented, new as far as, you know, people were sort of used to seeing working in Hollywood, I guess, you know, getting to contribute to the Star Trek universe and contributing to these shows. So it's been, I think, a positive relationship on both sides. We're getting a lot of good work coming from the people who are up there working on the shows, and obviously the show is giving back to the community really in a real way.
And it's both a mix of, you know, sort of imported talent, right? The, you know, we have a lot of American actors on the show, American directors. there's also a large amount of homegrown Canadian talent as well. I'm fairly certain, because she's a member of the Directors Guild of Canada, that Tamara Deverell, the production designer for Star Trek Discovery, is Canadian. And that is a huge tentpole production and a huge tentpole role to have. And so not only, you know, it's not just Canada being a location for, you know, other people to come in and make their shows. It's also a great opportunity for Canadian filmmakers to kind of stamp their mark and become just as famous and well-known as those from the United States as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
So then our last story for this week is also a fun one. Bloomington, Indiana, the future birthplace of Captain Janeway, is currently running a crowdfunding campaign to build a monument to the famous captain. So this is pretty similar to Captain Kirk, for whom there is a plaque in Riverside, Iowa, the birthplace of Captain Kirk, that notes that it is the birthplace of Captain Kirk. So there is a push by the Captain Janeway Bloomington Collective to raise money to do something similar for Captain Janeway in Bloomington, Indiana. And as I say, there is a fundraiser going on right now. If they can raise $12,500 by December the 21st, the city of Bloomington will match the contributions and the construction of the monument will be guaranteed. They have currently raised $8,663 with 37 days left to go. So they're over halfway towards their goal, probably close to two-thirds of the way there, and still with a full month left to go. If you're interested in donating to help ensure this monument, you can do it at patronicity.com, patronicity.com/Janeway. And I got this from StarTrek.com, and there is a picture of the proposed monument on StarTrek.com. And it's actually pretty cool. I mean, it's sort of a bust of Captain Janeway, but then there's an informational plaque that goes with it that's sort of got a map of the galaxy with the path of Voyager from the Delta Quadrant back home again. Lots of biographical information about the character. It actually will be a really cool monument. I have not personally donated yet, but it is on my list of things to do definitely before December the 21st. And since they are already two-thirds of the way towards their total, I think we should help them out and make sure they get all of the way there, because recognizing Star Trek is never a bad thing and something that we should support where possible. Bill, it seems like a pretty cool monument, don't you think?
I think it looks great. You know, it certainly would make me want to take a trip out to Bloomington, Indiana, more than, you know, any other reason. It would have a draw for me. I agree with what you said. The concept art, I guess you would call it at this point, for what the monument would look like, I think looks great. I love the little, assuming it's what would ultimately stick, in honor of Janeway's leadership and the accomplishments of others inspired by her character. I think that's really awesome, really apt. Janeway's certainly a character who has inspired a great many people. Definitely one of the characters that I think has resonated into sort of the overall fandom and the pop culture in the upper echelon of those characters who have done that. So I think the character is certainly worthy of a monument like this, and it would be really awesome to see them get there. And I think the fact that they're two-thirds of the way there already with a month to go is a pretty promising sign. And I really hope they get it.
Well, as Star Trek fans, we are frequently asked to open our wallets for all kinds of causes, and this is another one that I hope you will consider making a donation to. All right. Well, we've talked about the facts, and now let's speculate on what's going to happen in the future of Star Trek.
There's a war going on, and I'm a reporter.
So this is the fun part of the show, because each week I and my guest give you a wish or a theory we're nurturing about the future of the franchise. So, Bill, let's hear your theory or wish for this week.
I'm sure it's predictable, and you know, no doubt it's been mentioned many, many times on this segment before. But if I'm being honest with myself and everybody listening, it's my greatest wish is for the Pike show. I think with every new piece of content that features those actors and those characters and that ship, the production design of the Enterprise, it makes me want it more. And I think it would be in everyone's best interest to make that happen. I think people would be very, very excited. I'm sure it would be a big success. So that's my greatest hope. And I think, like we were saying earlier, that the signs are certainly pointed in the direction of something being in the works. I can't imagine that Alex Kurtzman would make the sorts of comments that he makes at his convention appearances, sort of hinting at something. And you know, the way that the short treks, so, like we said, have kind of acted as a backdoor pilot, particularly Q&A and Ask Not this week, certainly seem to be implying some sort of a setup for something. And I remain ever hopeful and increasingly confident that something will come of this. You kind of implied it earlier as well, that you're pretty confident as well. Where do you stand, like, on a 1 to 10 scale in terms of confidence that something along these lines is coming?
I'm a 10.
You're a 10.
Yeah, I'm a 10. And I'm, now that we're at the end of the show, so anybody listening who's not seen us, not yet, you can skip ahead a couple of minutes, because I'm now gonna I'm gonna go into my reasons why Ask Not makes me think that a Pike show is definitely on the way. So we've seen in previous short treks, you know, Runaway's the perfect example of a short trek that you make on a shoestring budget. Mm-hmm. It took place in two different sets that were well trafficked, well used: Discovery Hallway, the Discovery Mess Hall, and the Transporter Room, and Tilly's quarters. We'd seen all of them a bunch in the show. There was nothing new created there. And it was one or two digital shots that I think, again, were ones that we'd seen before. In this short trek, in a 9-minute episode, majority of the episode takes place in that one room with Pike and Cadet Seydou. And that piece is clearly just a repurposed set, like the Enterprise briefing room or something like that. But then they went to the trouble of, for what was probably amounted to 30 seconds worth of screen time, building an entire digital set for engineering, which was, now I think it's a controversial design. It seems like engineering's in this day and age are always controversial designs.
Yeah.
But, you know, they created a really elaborate digital set for engineering, which, if you were trying to cut costs, you still could have done that exact same scene. You would have just done it in the corridor outside, and it would have been like, here's engineering behind this closed door, and this is where you're assigned to. And then at the very end of the episode, she walks through the door and you never see what's inside. Like, that's the way you do it if you're not intending to use those digital assets ever again. So what we've seen is they've sort of built these physical or digital assets that they can amortize over the course of the show. You wouldn't just make that for a 9-minute short that, frankly, very few people are ultimately going to watch. Like, it's not even available internationally at the moment. Yeah. And we've definitely seen that, you know, for diehards like us, of course, we're going to watch them on the day that they come out. But we make up a very small percentage of the Star Trek fan population. I mean, I would venture to guess that even most Discovery fans who like the show and enjoy watching the show probably don't bother with the short treks.
Some of them probably don't even know the short treks exist. You know, like, it's possible that there's a big percentage of fans that will, you know, may never see these things.
Exactly. And CBS knows that, right? They know how many people watch these things. Even by the time that they filmed Ask Not, they'd still broadcast 4 of them. So they knew how many people watched those 4. So they know the kind of audience they're working with. And even though it's a digital asset, and therefore, you know, it's just one guy with a computer, that's still time, that's still effort, that's still money that they otherwise didn't need to spend, unless you're trying things out and putting the pieces in place to get a show off the ground, do it a little quicker because you're doing a lot of that prep work for it now. You're not having to build sets from scratch because you've done it as part of this short trek process or as part of Discovery Season 2. And then you're ready to go. I'm convinced that it's coming. I will be gobsmacked if we don't get some kind of Pike project at this point, just because, as I say, it doesn't say at the end of the episode, Captain Pike will return, but it might as well have said that from the moment they walked into that engineering set. And you got to look at that room and the thought and care and attention that went into putting that digital set together. It's just, it's screaming at you that this show is coming, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think the last line of the episode is, "I'll see you around the ship," Pike says.
Right.
I think we will.
Right. And the whole episode was about introducing a character to this crew, which to me was so much of a setup for something after, rather than this is exactly the same point you were making earlier. It was setting up something to come after. It wasn't kind of closing the last page of the book. Right. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about an interview that Michael Chabon had done where he talked about how Q&A was initially conceived as one of two short treks. The first short trek was Spock's first day on the Enterprise. The second short trek was Number One's last day on the Enterprise. If that was the short trek that they had filmed and broadcast as part of this, I think you could say, yeah, they've closed the book on it. You know, they've shown you Number One's last day on the ship. very much feel, you know, it would have had a real kind of goodbye sense to it. You know, you would have had those three characters talking about how much they enjoyed serving together and all of that. That would have been the perfect kind of tie it off and send it on its way. Mm-hmm. This was not that at all. It was very much a setup for something else.
Definitely. Yeah. And the short tracks, the way that they have built these short tracks and things they've done with them, with things like Runaway, like you talked about earlier, with the introduction of a character that paid off later, is something that they've established that they're, you know,
right,
deigned to do. It's mm-hmm. assuming that we're predicting something accurately here, it would not be the first time that they toyed with that kind of notion, introducing a character through a short and having it, you know, having that character return in a more meaningful way down the road.
So my theory this week is a listener submission. This is from actually a former guest of the show, Jamie McGregor, actually not just a former guest of the show, a former co-host from Weekly Trek, the original series. And he sent in this theory over Twitter, and I really liked it, which is that last episode, my guest Ross Webster and I had a conversation about some comments Mike McMahon had made about Star Trek Lower Decks at Destination Star Trek, in which he'd gotten as close to saying, yes, we're going to see familiar faces from the old Star Trek shows in the Lower Decks TV show than he got before. But he said something like, but they may not be the people that you expect. And so Jamie's theory is that those unexpected characters that they bring back will actually be one of the characters from the Next Generation episode, Lower Decks. So maybe we'll see Sam Lavelle or Torik or yes. Ben or Alyssa or potentially even Sito Jaxa. And Jamie signs off his tweet with hashtag Sito Jaxa lives. That would be a really cool way of tying the show back to the episode that shares its name. You know, they yes. have conceptual similarities, focusing on the junior officers rather than the senior officers on the ship. And so I think that is a fabulous theory. Bill, what do you think?
Most definitely. I think Jamie's on to something. That sounds incredibly like something Mike McMahon would do. It just feels right. It seems like something that at this point, now that I've heard that and I'm thinking about it, almost feels inevitable. And I can't wait. Any of those characters would be welcome to see again, any of them, truly. But Sito Jaxa tying up that story somehow, you know, learning more about that, what happened. I have mixed feelings, actually, the more I'm thinking about it. I feel like the end of Lower Decks is so powerful, and I kind of want to leave it alone, but I wouldn't be opposed to seeing her again at all. And just the idea of revisiting, you know, that idea, you know, which we already are with the Lower Decks show to begin with, but the characters from the episode that sort of hatched the idea is an exciting prospect for sure.
I think the one I would want to see the most isn't actually Sito Jaxa for the reasons that you said. I think mm-hmm. we know that the USS Cerritos has some form of 10 forward bar, because those shots, yes. there's that shot of the four main characters together and they're in some kind of bar. I'd love it to be Ben.
Yeah, I think that'd
be great. Who's the like Guinan character.
Yes.
On, you know, and he has these stories of the Enterprise D. And the other thing is, you know, we know that Tendi is this sort of big Starfleet, you know, fangirl. You know, how cool would it be if she has these regular interactions with someone who can provide all these firsthand stories of her heroes and how they dealt with situations and things like that? I think that would be a really cool one.
Sounds perfect.
Well, Jamie, if we do find any of these characters appearing in Lower Decks, you're in for kudos, and we'll have been more right with your theories than I have been with many of mine. Do you have a theory or a wish for Discovery, Picard, or the future of the franchise that you'd like to share? Tweet them to me at Weekly Trek, and I might feature your theory in a future episode. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode of Weekly Trek. Thank you so much to my guest, Bill Mann, for joining me today. Bill, how can people contact you if they want to continue the conversation?
They can find me on Twitter at TrekFan4387. I'm constantly rewatching Star Trek and tweeting up little episode reviews and polls, and I'd love to hear from you.
And where are you right now in Trek Rewatch 3.0?
I just finished season 2 of TNG, so I'm getting into season 3, right into the meat of it as Picard is fast approaching. So I'm very much looking forward to cracking that open. I took the approach this time around. I've done this quite a few times. Like you said, this is my rewatch 3.0 on Twitter. The previous two, I burned through very, very fast, and I kind of made the conscious decision to go slower this time and let the episodes marinate a little bit more and not be in such a rush to burn through it. And I've enjoyed that, but it's going to be a much harder task once I get into season 3, I think, to take it slow. It's that some of the most bingeable Star Trek, if you ask me.
Oh, absolutely.
Middle season run. Yeah, of course, people can also find me on YouTube at Trek Live, usually on Saturday or Sunday mornings around 10 a.m. Eastern time. My good buddy Dan and I have live stream conversations about things like we talked about today on Weekly Trek and whatever's happening in the Star Trek universe and cool other topics, you know, whatever we're kind of feeling like talking about. We're very, you know, it's a live show, so it's very unscripted and casual, and it's meant to sort of feel like you stumble in and you get to take part in the kind of conversation you would have if you bumped into a couple of friendly people at a convention or something. Very relaxed, very casual Star Trek conversation.
Well, you can find this show on Twitter at Weekly Trek and me at Alexander T. Perry. And if you enjoy the show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast player of choice. And please check out some of the other great shows on the Tricorder Transmissions. And if you like our shows, please also consider becoming a Patreon of Tricorder, which you can find at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And lastly, if you're looking for Star Trek news on the internet, I hope you will turn to trekcore.com. Well, thank you, Bill. Thank you to all of my listeners. And until next week, live long and prosper.